7 years old when I first heard him scream. It scared me then, and it scares me now.
This is Monsterland, Ohio Radio, episode 35, live from Falk.
This is Monsterland, Ohio Radio, the official podcast of monsterlandohio.blogspot.com. I'm one of your hosts, Mark Matsky.
And I'm your other co-host, Andy Matsky.
The other co-host?
Other host, I know. I tried not to do that, and I was like, don't do that. And it's like the whole golf thing where you're like, don't do that, yep. But you do it.
If you think about the water, that's exactly where you'll hit it. That's one thing that Grampy taught me long ago.
If you,
I don't want a slice right now. Boom. Perfect slice.
What? But if you, I think I want to hit the hole. You don't hit the hole.
As Andy said, we are live
from Falk. Arkansas. Talking about golf. Talking about golf.
Yeah, this is an episode entirely about golf.
Sorry, Grampy. We were going to have you on this episode. Uh-oh, here comes a car.
Yeah, we are standing on the Sutton family's lawn in what I believe to be Jonesville, Arkansas. And we are here because the Small Town Monsters movie, Boggy Creek Monster, is being made. And as we speak, a scene is being shot. A witness interview is being recorded. And we are present and helping out in any way that we can. And just for the most part, riding the coattails of STM. And the whole point of it was to get to Falk, Arkansas, which was the subject of 1972's The Legend of Boggy Creek.
Yes, it was. We traveled here from Ohio to Boggy Creek, Arkansas, which doesn't exist, to Falk, Arkansas.
There is a Boggy Creek.
Yeah, there is a very boggy creek, which being at Boggy Creek, seeing it at this blows your mind and re-blows your mind and re-blows your mind. And we have been here for the past 2 days? 2 days.
Two full days.
Two full days. One fourth day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's breathtaking. It's the area of quote-unquote Falk is very big. Well, it's not big. No, it's not very big. It's big. But downtown Falk is so small. There is literally a car going by right now. There's literally the Monster Mart, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Another store across the street. Like, a hardware store. And a gas station. And that's it. I mean, there's like, and the only like big named food place there, chain, is a Subway. Which is in a other restaurant, which is the weirdest thing ever. It's like one side of the restaurant's this classic restaurant, and the other side's a Subway.
Yeah, what's the name of that place? Allen's Burger. It's not like Allen's Burger World or some. It's a good name.
Burger Place?
Allen's Burger Place.
Allen's Burger Space. I like that.
But their menu is gigantic.
Oh my goodness. We didn't have food there, though. We had some.
So in 1972, Charles B. Pierce made a docudrama that was groundbreaking in many ways, and it was all about the seemingly unlikely scenario of a Bigfoot-like creature inhabiting the swamps of Fauk and the Sulphur River bottoms, which includes Boggy Creek.
Day's Creek.
And I think, I don't know how much we've talked about that movie on this show, but it really was a landmark movie in the sense that people who saw it in the 70s, who didn't live in the Pacific Northwest, all of a sudden were confronted with the idea that Bigfoot might be in their own backyard as well. And there's many anecdotal and written source material that indicates, bless you,
allergies, man,
that indicates that the legend of Boggy Creek is responsible for an entire generation of people being interested in Bigfoot, and not just interested, but also it becoming almost an obsession and a pastime of theirs, where they go out looking for Bigfoot creatures in their own region.
Yeah. And the common misconception with this podcast is you got started on Bigfoot with the movie. That's something that I've heard people say, and you're like, no. So tell us your story with Boggy Creek.
Right, yeah, that's not entirely accurate, as you said. My start with Bigfoot was actually most likely traceable to a Saturday morning television show that was part of the Sid Marty Krofft hour, or maybe it was a longer, but it was a Saturday morning sort of anthology show for kids, and included in that was a show called Bigfoot and Wild Boy, which, as the title suggests, was a wild boy who befriended Bigfoot, and they would, I don't remember if they solved crimes, but
that would be awesome. It like would Sherlock be. Holmes. Does she constantly, this wild boy constantly say Bigfoot instead of Watson?
Yeah. And
my dear Bigfoot.
Oh. Yeah, it was a procedural crime drama. But
it was like the what is a crime show now? How to Get Away
Law
with
and
Murder.
Order. Law and Order.
Law and Order of its time was Bigfoot and Wild
Law
Boy.
And Order Bigfoot edition.
I don't get Bigfoot and Wild Boy kind of to dive into that, because wouldn't the Wild Boy also be a Bigfoot-like creature, or was he not?
No, he was completely human, and he wore, if I'm remembering this right, he had like a deer skin diaper sort of thing. Or perhaps
deer skin diaper.
Perhaps
that's awesome.
Loincloth would be the more technical.
Oh, I hope my laugh wasn't recorded. Answer. That well, recorded in the movie making. I don't know how far away that is.
But
deer so, skin and, diaper. I love it.
Right. So anyway, they definitely fought bad guys, probably like poachers and things like
bad
that.
Bad guys, like interdimensional pirates and stuff.
So that got me interested in the subject, and I went to my local library and found books there, most of them at that time written by Marion T. Place. The first one was On the Track of Bigfoot. That's one of the first nonfiction books that I remember really reading. And remember trying to imagine these places in my mind's eye, like the Pacific Northwest and Northern California and Bluff Creek. And that's where I became familiar with names like Bob Gimlin and Roger Patterson and John Green. And then Marion T. Place came out with another book called Bigfoot All Over the Country, which sort of, as the title suggests, got into other places besides the Pacific Northwest. So that's really how I got my beginning interest in Bigfoot, and it was in picking up a book that was offered through Scholastic Books called Monsters and Mysteries of North America, I think it might have been. But it was by Elwood Bauman, and in that book was a couple chapters on this movie called The Legend of Boggy Creek. And I had never heard of it before. I had never seen it on television or anywhere else. And in the late 70s, you were either going to see a movie one of two ways. One was in the movie theater, and the other was if it showed on TV and you were around at the right time, you could watch it. Well, that started a quest, if you will.
A monster quest.
A white whale of mine was to find that movie and watch it. And it took probably 10 to 12 years for me to finally, this was now in the age of VCRs that you could tape shows at home. And one of our local stations in Michigan, late one night, ran The Legend of Boggy Creek. I just remember being so floored when I saw in the TV guide that Legend of Boggy Creek was going to be on. So I very carefully set the VCR to tape overnight, and sure enough, it worked. And I just remember watching that for the first time, just being totally enthralled and enraptured. It was even better than I had hoped the movie would be, and it just brought to life not just the Bigfoot encounters, which are recreated in a pretty convincing way because you never really see the creature that clearly, but also the culture of the South, at least in the late 70s. And that's been one of the interesting things about being here, is to see, you know, has Fauk changed since then, and what are the people like? And the thing that's pretty cool is that in some ways, it hasn't changed very much, and in some other ways, Fauk is a lot like anywhere else you could go in the United States these days because of franchised places like Subway, internet. You know, I get better LTE coverage on my phone out in the middle of nowhere in Arkansas than I did in my house in Ohio. So in some ways, you know, that those things have changed the culture, but there's still kind of a Southern feel and a sense of hospitality and people being pretty friendly to you that has continued on here. So that's sort of my Boggy Creek discourse, as it were. What about you? Tell us about the Boggy Creek movie and your thoughts.
My thoughts on the movie was, I love it. It's such a good, I almost want to call it not a docudrama, but a true documentary, because that's what it feels like. I mean, very few people in that original movie were playing other people. They weren't themselves. And the thing about it that I always remember is just wondering what it would be like to be there at that time. I knew it was not at that time when they did the movie, but when things were actually happening, what was it like? I love it. I could watch it forever.
So what has it been like for you to actually be in some of these locations where the movie was filmed and people are still willing to talk about sightings?
It's been mind-blowing. I know I might say that about a lot of things, but it's just been like, whoa, it actually looks like that. We were at an area, was it two nights ago or was it last night? Where I was literally just like, it looks like you think it would look like. I mean, we were driving there and on the side there was like swamps. On the side of the road there's swamps. It's just amazing. It's the wildlife here is awesome and amazing, even though almost everything's trying to kill you. I mean, when people say that, they honestly mean it. Everything's trying to kill you. Because I've seen like two snakes and a bunch of bugs, which one was bothering me right then, and haven't seen an alligator yet. But you know what? I'm fine with that.
Yeah. One of our friends, Aaron, who's doing some behind-the-scenes footage for the Small Town Monsters movie, went down right next to Boggy Creek yesterday, and he came back with a picture of, like, a cougar print. And it's a pretty big print.
Yeah.
And like Andy said, there's all kinds of wildlife around here. We were able to hear the curator of the Miller County Historical and Family Museum talk about this area in particular, and what drew white settlers to this area, and it was basically the abundant wildlife and the vast variety of animals that live here. And it's just really staggering to consider, you know, everything that's out there, even bear, which really, that surprised me, I guess, that there would be bear walking around in this environment, but I guess there is. And that's partially why it's not completely implausible to think Well, if bear can survive and have habitat out here, then perhaps some mystery primate or whatever Bigfoot is could also do the same. Because we were just talking to somebody this morning that said there's parts of the Sulphur River bottoms that are accessible only by horseback.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me that places like this still exist in the good old U.S.
of A. And stuff, it's just the trees, like they talked about this with Whitehall, and it's true here, the trees go forever. I mean, seeing drone footage, it's like, even though it's not the best shot or what we're looking for, you just go up, and once you get up, there's trees and there's like these open patches, and easily spots where something could stay in that tree line not being seen.
Probably one of the neatest things about our first day, which for me is still sort of the highlight day of our experience here. It started out at the museum that I mentioned before, and we heard interviews with both the curator of the museum and the man who was the sheriff at the time that the Legend of Boggy Creek was filmed, and then in the aftermath of that, everything that happened in the town. But then after that, the pretty well-known researcher named Lyle Blackburn took us around to various famous Boggy Creek sites, including the place where, just easily accessible, just pulling off to the roadside, where Boggy Creek originates, and then another place where Boggy Creek passes through a culvert, and you can just see up and down that creek, and it really does, by itself, look pretty spooky and kind of weird.
I sound like the Ring of Terror, because the word for it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, no joke or anything, it's just like a big creek that, I don't know the word to describe it, but you know, like when it heavily rains and you get like those creeks on the side of the roads and the ditches and they're all dirty, that's like practically what Boggy Creek is, but bigger. And creepy. Really creepy. I mean, and like weird wildlife, even if it's quote-unquote normal wildlife, like turtles, I've noticed here, can duck down underneath the water like they're getting pulled down, like boom.
Now, right now, for example, we're standing in a well-maintained front yard, but right across the road, there is a pretty good representation of the forest around these parts, and it's part pine trees and part some other trees, but the underbrush is so thick that you can't really see
15 feet in.
Right.
I mean, I'm trying to see, and I can see like the sun on some trees right back there, but beyond there, I don't see anything.
Yeah.
So I bet if I was wearing neon yellow, if I went back there 30 feet, you wouldn't see me. Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, so as far as something big being able to hide, I mean, this is like a perfect place for that
I believe to be true. Bigfoot could hide here more than Ohio, easily. Mm-hmm. I think how many could be in Ohio could easily just be in the Fauk, Argolitex area and stay hidden. And something, speaking of Ohio, I think almost everyone in the crew has said at one point that's from Ohio said, wow, this looks like Ohio. Because there is areas that's like, there's very little difference.
Sorry. The other place that Lyle took us to was the Beanfield area. And if you've seen the movie, there's a prominent part of that where a very weird track line was discovered and sort of controversial in the sense that it's three-toed tracks and people have various ideas about whether it's three toes were impressed, but there were really five, or it really is a three-toed track. Usually when you're dealing with three-toed tracks, there's other very weird stuff going on, which I don't think has ever been attached to the Fauk monster phenomenon. You don't get into, like, UFOs and other weird stuff.
High strangeness stuff.
It's generally been,
yeah,
like, just another creature in the woods type thing.
That's why I think the Bigfoot, this is my rough theory this for being here,
sure,
that at the bean field, the Bigfoot was running, and it maybe had something wrong with its feet, or just the way it ran, was it, like, did something weird with its feet. If they have flexible feet, it did that, and it just impressed in a way that, if from what I've seen, the three toes are kind of all wobber-jobby. Just the way it impressed looks like three toes. I'm not saying the weight was more on three toes than that, because that makes less sense than most theories, but I think maybe it was just running and stuff. I think they were real, but with any of that, you could just say it was a hoax, and anything could be a hoax.
With those tracks, I guess the stride length was very long, and Lyle was talking about this, I think, and made a good point. He said if this was a hoax, like somebody on stilts or something, then that person ran that track perfectly, and there were no mistakes where somebody fell off. If somebody was assisting them, there were no other boot prints around. So it's one of those weird, weird situations. But anyway, we were able to at least drive by that field, which is now a ranch, I guess, pretty fancy-looking place when we saw it. Let's talk about Fowlk itself, in particular, the Monster Mart.
The Monster Mart. Oh, man. You'll see pictures on the Twitter feed if you haven't already. It's amazing. I can't even wrap my head around being a kid here and growing up with the Monster Mart just being the Monster Mart. Because they have so much Bigfoot stuff. Like, the whole half of the store is Bigfoot stuff. And then the other half is like a not hardware store, but like a general store that, like, Lyle had a brake light out, and he got a brake light there. And it's just like, that's what they have there. They have what you need, and tons of great food and junk food. It's awesome.
Yeah, and the thing that I didn't realize is that the general store that's across the street from the Monster Mart is the store. It was owned by different people, but it's the store at the beginning of The Legend of Boggy Creek, where a little boy runs into town to tell Willie Smith that they heard a strange noise.
Heard a creature.
That's the store where the little boy ran into. So that was pretty awesome, because we just went in there one time to kill some time and look around. And that's the place. So we set foot there. Yeah, Monster Mart is just an amazing, amazing place. And has a whole variety of Fowlk Monster memorabilia. One thing that I got that I'm most excited about is a book by Smokey Crabtree, who is a very prominent personality in the whole Fowlk community. He's pretty much responsible for, you know, taking the story to, you know, of course the movie is, but Smokey Crabtree was able to help Pierce talk to witnesses and stuff when he decided to make his movie. So I got his book, his first book, and I'm really looking forward to reading that, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got a CD as well of spoken word stuff, and I don't know if there's music on there or not.
Read.
I'm pretty tempted to maybe get that before we leave as well.
And then, Fowlk is amazing. It's just, everyone knows each other, pretty much, and it just seems like one big, happy town. It doesn't seem like they get that upset, but, and the museum. Do you want to talk about the museum at all?
Oh, sure, yes.
The museum where we shot the interviews, it's just amazing. With just, they have a little bit of Fowlk, well, creature stuff, and then the whole other museum is just Fowlk things and, like, autographs from people who have been through there. And, I mean, I learned a ton just about Fowlk there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a real privilege, I thought, to be able to go in there and look around and get a feel for the town with and without the monster portion of their history. And as Mr. McFerrin said, he's the curator of the museum and the historian, you know, the monster and the Legend of Boggy Creek movie in particular really has brought the attention of the world to this community, and in so doing has helped it economically in a way that it wouldn't have have had otherwise, because the vast majority of the people with good jobs evidently go other places in order to get those. Like, they go to Texarkana, or they even drive down to Louisiana, which isn't that far away, but there's just not a whole lot of what you might call industry in Fauk, Arkansas. So the money that they're able to generate from tourists like us coming into town and wanting to, you know, walk in the same footsteps as the creature, really does help the local economy significantly. And that's one of the things that Small Town Monsters really has brought to bear, trying to awaken in various locations, is that if you have a monster history, you can capitalize on that. Now, these days, it's not something to be ashamed of or something to mock people about. It can actually benefit your community if you embrace it.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of towns should do this. I mean, like you said, the economical help, I'm sure, in Fauk is immensely part of how it helps. And I think a lot of towns could. And that's what, you're right, they are pushing. And if all the towns do this, I mean, that could really help them out. Have a Minerva Monster Day, so to speak, in your town. Celebrating what your monster heritage is.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to wrap this up here for now. We've got the rest of this day that we're going to be around Fauk, Arkansas, and we'll see what happens. Andy, any concluding thoughts at this time about the Fauk experience?
I think a lot more people should go to Fauk. We did the 15-hour drive, so can you, because you really get to know the people here a lot better than you might think you would. And, I mean, seriously, just come here to go to the Monster Mart. And, I mean, Boggy Creek is easy to find, and just have a good time. And, I mean, this area is so beautiful. You will be so glad you came if you come.
I think Fauk's a right nice place to live until the sun goes down.
Creature, no! Oh, Jimmy got ripped apart, no! Okay. We are here at the Searcy residence, and I am here with Lyle Blackburn. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
I was just wondering, could you describe what happened here for our listeners?
Well, the Searcy house is very important to the legend of Boggy Creek, because not only was it seen in the movie, used as a set piece there, but it was the actual location of one of the early sightings around the mid-1960s by a young lady, Mary Beth Searcy, who reported seeing a strange hairy creature coming up out of the woods as she looked out the back window. And so what we see here today is the house where that occurred, and the house where they reenacted it for the movie, and the house is still here. It's really the only structure that we know of that's still left from the movie that stands today, and it's not standing as well. I've come up here every couple of years, and it's really dilapidated, as I'm sure mm-hmm. you can see.
Was the thing about the cat being scared to death real? Or was that just for dramatization?
That was dramatization. I can't say that nobody ever reported some animal dying of fright, and animals did come up dead under strange circumstances. But really, yeah, the cat was kind of an added thing for the movie.
And do you know, like, when the Searcys moved here, well, moved away from here, are they still, is the house still in their possession? Or do you know any about that?
It's still in their possession. This house was built in the 1800s, and in fact, I mean, it's very historical, not just in terms of the legend of Boggy Creek, but just in terms of the history of the families that live here, and it's important to them for sentimental reasons, obviously, because many of the family were actually born in this house, and it's a something from a bygone era of, you know, a hand-constructed house mm-hmm. this far out in the rural setting, and they still owned it, own the house, and they own the property, but they've since lived in other houses that have been built here. It's just not livable anymore.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for being on just this quick bit, and maybe in this last day or so we can have you on again, or maybe just in the future. So thank you for coming on.
You bet.
And we're back to Monsterland, Ohio Radio.
And a lot has happened in 1 month's time. As we are recording this, it will have been a month and a day since we showed up in Fauk.
It's amazing. It's been a month already. I'm still in mourning since we've missed Fauk back. I miss the Monster Mart. Convenience stores will never be the same for me.
There's nothing else like it, is there?
It's just, it's this awesome Bigfoot place with awesome food. It's the best convenience store ever. Just go to Fauk to go to the Monster Mart.
I think there was a sensation that we had immediately after coming home, and even in the weeks that followed, almost of being in mourning. You know, it was such a great experience, and we missed the team that we were with, and just the completely different setting, and of course being immersed in all that Bigfoot lore and stuff. It was, you know, something that we've thought about a lot since we returned, and so a lot has happened to us as well. Yeah. Over that month's period of time. Andy, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, we moved into our new house in beautiful Ohio. And
yes. Suffice it to say that this is the first recording that we have done in our new headquarters. And it's
the new HQ.
Yeah.
I'm a poet and I didn't know
it. And I have to say, the surroundings are pretty cool.
Yeah, much bigger space, and my Ultraman are up. After, how long has it been since we moved it? It's like a week and a half and my Ultraman are up. Since pretty much all our stuff was unloaded. It's, I think besides some books, it's the first organization I did was my Ultraman, which isn't done yet, because right now I have a nice shelf of my normal vinyl figures. And then below it is just chaos of all my kaiju. And then another one of nicely organized, then below it chaos. Then nicely organized. Below that, some random stuff, including a box.
So having had a month to think about things and process them, what are you going to remember most about the Boggy Creek Monster experience?
What I will really remember is, this sounds stupid, but being there and just having a blast. Just having a fun time with awesome people and making a movie, being, even if it was slightly involved, which we really weren't, but any way I can be a part of something like that is awesome. And the idea I was, it's just, mind's re-exploding and I'm still laughing about stuff that happened there.
I found it interesting that Seth said he was worried that we would be bored while we were there, and it wasn't that way at all. The opportunity to be in Fauk was really, you know, literally a dream come true for me, and to share it with you was also a dream come true. And I haven't done this yet, except in small bits, but I still have yet to watch Legend of Boggy Creek in total since being back, and I'm really looking forward to doing that in some ways, and in other ways, I can't get to it right now. I could watch it on YouTube, I guess. But part of me, I don't know. I want to watch it, but I don't want to watch it, and I can't really articulate why. But I know you've seen it.
Yes, I have seen it since then.
What was that experience like, really? Because we haven't really talked about that.
I went, it was almost literally one or the other, A or B. I went in between geeking out, being like, I was there. That's what it's like. It's like, this is not any different. And in between almost crying because I was there, like just being like in an emotional state. It's like, I was there. That's what it does look like. That's being in Fauk. And to see places that we've been in the movie that's like, or the crew has been on, and I've seen footage from it. This is what it looks like now, but that's what it looked like back then, and it's amazing. And also discovering that maybe how Sasquatch got its name. To do that, watch Legend of Boggy Creek. You might catch something. What?
And one more clue. It's around the bean field scene, but that's all we'll say. Being down there, we may have touched on this in the first segment, so we'll just go real quickly through this, but having been there and looked around, or maybe as a result of anybody that you heard talk, what do you think about the likelihood of the existence of a Bigfoot-like creature in those swamps?
Way more than in Ohio.
Really?
To take like the Archilotex area and what the Mississippi waterbed might look like compared to that area with the Sulphur River and stuff. And if that's what it looks like throughout there has to be more of a population down there. Or at least it's more likely for them to be down. Because in Ohio, you can see 30, 40 feet in the woods if it's like a valley-type area. There, you can't see 15 feet in the woods. And that's honest. That might be overstating it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you can see, and if we ever go back, I want to try something that is, get like Under Armour, bright neon clothes, and walk back into the woods and see if people notice me.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Because. That'd be a good experiment.
Because, you know, I'm not scared of Bigfoot, I'll put that out there, or Sasquatch. But. You know, the whole aggressive thing. I think down there, you have to be more scared of boars and snakes than a Bigfoot that could rip your head off or something like that. Because I think a boar would be much scarier. I think there's more mean boar than there are.
A swamp Bigfoot's just going to try to avoid you, I think.
Yeah, I think.
And could do so easily.
There's no reason why the southern Bigfoot would be aggressive. If so, the Ohio Bigfoot should be more aggressive than there because it's more challenged with survival. I mean, I am so glad the whole time we were there we had a quote-unquote guide, people who knew the area, because if not, we would easily have gotten lost tons of times, and we really didn't go back in the woods, which, you know, you could go, you guys didn't go back in the woods, are you upset? No, I'm glad we didn't go back in the woods sometimes because, I mean, we didn't see any gators or anything, but you knew they were out there. And they're mean and bitey.
Yeah. I think we both feel like we would love to go back.
I would go back. I would do the whole trip in a heartbeat again. I would take the 14-hour drive just to go back to Fauk. I'll put that out there. I would do 28 hours in the car just to go to Fauk. And it's actually a good thing, because now two-hour drives are nothing, like to OBC.
Right. So, for our listeners, if you ever have the opportunity to get to Fauk, Arkansas, do it for sure.
If it's slightly
the one thing I would say is go on a weekend or, you know, kind of do some research on the internet and make sure you can get in to see the Miller County Museum, because that will help put the whole thing in context for you. I mean, you know, obviously you have to go see Monster Mart and those type of things. But really sort of starting out our Fauk experience by going to that museum was the perfect beginning.
I'll say this. Get to know the town, then know the monster. Because if you know Fauk, and I mean, how long were they down there? Were they down there for
about
like 8 days?
Yeah.
A week?
Mm-hmm.
They had people like knowing their first names. They knew people. I was joking with one of the crew members when they had only been there like 3 days and it was our first day that like when I think it was like my second time at the Monster Mart, like people knew his name and stuff and they were talking. I'm like, do you know everyone in Fauke? And it's like that. I bet if you were there a month, you would know everyone in that area or know of someone who knows the person and they could tell you all about them.
And, you know, they talk about Southern hospitality and we learned that that's a real thing. You know, people are really outgoing and welcoming and very sincerely friendly. And we had the experience of being brought into a home. It's where we did the first segment of this episode.
Was in their yard.
Was in their yard. And then we were invited when filming was done to go in and eat this amazing meal that the witness's mother had put together. That was just outstanding. It was like the best real food we had had for that whole trip.
It was the only real food we had had during that whole trip. And two things I learned are true during this trip. Southern hospitality and that everything will kill you. Besides the people. Maybe
so
some of the
it's
people.
It's quite a blend. Really.
Yes. But it's the truth.
Yeah.
And I won't. Yeah.
But, so anyway.
Creature talk.
Last thing I want to do is just say, and we've done this personally, obviously, but thank you to Seth for inviting us.
Can't thank him enough.
Yeah.
Every time I see him for the next how many years I'll be able to see him, I don't think I could thank him enough, truly.
And
thank you, thank you, thank you.
The whole Small Town Monsters crew for allowing us to kind of be around and observe everything and include us and stuff. Also, just thank you to everybody who is supportive of us along the way. Lyle Blackburn, we really have to thank him for
thank you.
Taking us around to some of the key Boggy Creek sites. That was just a phenomenal afternoon. I guess that's it. Oh!
All our fans.
Yeah, right. But
the millions upon millions of fans.
And I guess thanks to Charles B. Pierce for making this movie in sort of a crazy way back in the day. And in some respect, I think what Small Town Monsters is doing is a continuation of that, but hopefully in a way that will only create a positive attention on Fauke and Miller County. And one last thing that I wanted to mention was while I was at Monster Mart, I picked up a copy of Smokey Crabtree's book, his first book, The Fauke Monster and Me or something. Smokey and the Fauke Monster. That's an excellent read. If you can get your hands on a copy, I highly recommend that. And there's interesting information in there about how he felt Charles B. Pierce took the people of the town for a ride and promised them stuff and never delivered, and it's pretty eye-opening in that regard. And also a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff about the creature itself and the Crabtree family's sort of interaction with this creature and the fallout of the world's attention being drawn to Fauke. Just an excellent, excellent read, and we got a CD where he tells some of the stories that are also in the book.
Awesome.
And it's just so great to hear him.
He could catch fish with his bare hands
yeah.
regularly. It's like he went down to the Sulphur River and just dove in the water. It's like,
yeah,
dude, come on.
Just an outstanding American life, the type of which I'm not sure anyone lives anymore. And so it's worth a read just for that respect. And it was great to hear the CD and hear his voice, because unfortunately, Smokey has passed away, and there was a pretty moving tribute to him at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, which you'll be able to hear on the Ohio Bigfoot Conference episode that's coming up a couple episodes from now, so
Recorded. Look
forward to that.
Yeah, and for some time travel episodes, we recorded a couple episodes in the car on the way back, so be kind of weird, including a couple of really weird named episodes, and some of which that don't have names, so should have a contest, but.
Yeah. All right, so before we go, I want to do something that's been sort of delayed for months, and that is the reading of some letters. And this goes back to February 14th, Valentine's Day, right?
Yeah.
And this was in reaction to our Moving Day episode. It says, enjoyed listening to your latest broadcast. Felt sad, though, as you were moving. Life goes on. Well, what I wanted to say was, what a nice job you two are doing with the broadcasts. Andy, you are awesome. Keep up the good work, and may the force be with you. Later, guys. Barb.
And also with you.
Oh, that's awesome. Good to hear from you, Barb, and feel free to write anytime. Next up, this one says, great show, guys. I just wanted to stop by and tell you how much I enjoy your show. My brother Jay turned me on to it a month or so ago, and I've been listening to it in addition to Sasquatch and Sasquatch Chronicles. You two have a great time, and I think your listeners do as well. You just can't beat a father-son podcast on monsters and all things sci-fi. Great job. Jay and I are reading Dr. Meldrum's book, Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science, and have been having weekly discussions on Google Hangout. Jay lives in Harrison, Ohio, and I live in Cookeville, Tennessee. We're both from Canton, Ohio. We're also both Christians and have enjoyed hearing you share the same faith. Great father-son show, guys. Keep up the good work. From Mike. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's cool that someone told someone about MO Radio. I don't think that's ever happened.
Yeah.
Except me telling people, which I don't think counts. That doesn't count. This is weird. We're doing letters at the end of a show. Are we allowed to do this?
Sure. I mean, that we're just that crazy.
Yeah.
Nobody does
we're
it
that
this
Star
way.
Wars Rebels crazy. We're Star Wars Rebels.
Ezra! Sorry. Okay.
You just read that one.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That would be interesting. Okay. Last one. I truly, truly enjoy Monsterland Ohio Radio. Out of the gate, you both made a great podcasting team. The fact that you're father and son only enhances the dynamic. I'm all caught up on the back catalog, and I'm really looking forward to the next edition. You touch on a few things that were favorites of mine as a kid. I watched Godzilla and other kaiju movies on Saturday TV when I was a kid in California centuries ago in the 1970s. I loved the Universal Monsters, watching them when I could and reading about them in books I found in the school library. Star Wars, comic books, MST3K, even watched some Ultraman when we first got a VCR. You guys are my kind of guys. Which brings me to this question and or suggestion. Do you guys watch Doctor Who? I love the original series, and it became a huge influence on me from some of my fashion sense to wanting to know something about everything. Having a hero who uses his brain to save the day is an excellent role model for anyone. Plus, there is space travel, time travel, monsters, and scary stories. I'm not quite as enchanted with the new series as I was with the old one, but I love it all the same. Perhaps if you guys watch it, you can do an episode on that, or I could give suggestions on what stories to watch in order to give it a shot or a second chance. Keep up the great work, and thanks so much for the show. It really is a treat to share such a great father-son relationship through the love of mutual geekery. Cheery bye for now. S. George, Steve Lee. And the cool thing about Steve is that he has something called the Audio Lair Podcast, which you really should check out. It's kind of a real cool thing. Reactions to
this is Steve our Lee. First request. This is like a first letter thing. The thing with Doctor Who is we have never tried. I want to try the old series. Like he says he liked it, and I think the weird part is, even though I get it, I just think it's slightly weird as how the main character can restart, if that makes sense. But I'm almost used to that with comics, so I think I think we could give it a try sometime, easily, with like Netflix and stuff.
Let's take Steve up on his offer. If you have some episodes in particular that you think we should start with, let us know. So we'll put that out there. Steve, if you're listening, send us your recommendations, and we will definitely work up a reactions to Doctor Who episode. That would be very cool, because the thing that's interesting for me is that you would be working from a completely blank slate, because I have really absolutely no experience with Doctor Who, and that's not for any reason except there's only so much time in a geek's life, And
this is going to be the summer of me trying stuff, I have to say. Doctor Who, and I'm thinking about getting, since Nintendo re-released them, the Pokemon first game.
Oh, yeah.
And that is what I need help with. Which one should I play? Red, blue, yellow? I don't know if I want to start with yellow, because that's later. But if you want to give me suggestions on that, too, I would love it. Because, you know, I think it'd be awesome to catch up, so to speak, which games to play, which ones to not. And I have found a love for role-playing games like that, like Zelda and this. I just love that gameplay because it's hard for me sometimes. I go, what am I supposed to do as opposed to, oh, I'm supposed to make Mario jump through the level. I mean, I love playing those games, but I'm a boss. I'm probably not.
See, that's amazing to me because I think of you as just a video game wizard, but it makes sense that it's a little bit, you know, the challenge mm-hmm. is what you would be interested
in. It's
what
I love about it. I got, how long did I have Wind Waker for? I had Wind Waker HD for my Wii U. I got from the library. It's the only game ever I've gotten from the library. And I got, you know, like there's level. That was out of my mouth.
It's the thinking squeak. The brain is very engaged when the squeak happens. It's like pressure building up has yeah. to be released somehow.
you just got my mind distracted.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
And I got... I got... Probably not conscientious about it. I got...
there, I did it.
I got about four areas in, not levels, but, you know, different... Not worlds, but... And I had the game for about a week. And it was like a free week. It wasn't like... doing school, coming back, doing church. It was like a totally blank slate week. And, you know, I tried it whenever I could, and I probably got... I don't want to say how much time I got, but I enjoyed it. But it takes time for those puzzles to work for me because my brain's not exposed to them.
All right, well, if you have any suggestions about Pokemon... or Doctor Who, or anything else that you want us to watch and react to, send those to moradio@outlook.com. We would be happy to respond in good time, hopefully, now that we're getting settled into our new surroundings. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at morpodcast, twitter.com/morpodcast. It's one way to find us, or just at MOR Podcast. Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't know. At MOR Podcast. Or.
You're like, can you do that?
I was. Say it. I thought it was Facebook. The thing is, I thought it was Facebook that you do. Facebook.com/.
We're not on Facebook.
I know. That's why I gave you that look. This is happening. This has been happening. This is the, huh?
So, yes. Thanks for listening. Thanks for going with us to Fauk. Hope that you enjoyed a little sense of what it was like to be down there in the river bottoms where the creature walks.
I can't do it on command.
Keep circulating the tapes.
He always travels the creeks.
This is where the story plays, a world on which we seldom gaze, a page from the book of yesterday. Birds and beasts and wind and water, here beneath the bright blue sky, no man's foe blinds the eagle's eye, and things that crawl or swim or fly, feed and breed and live and die. Seasons passed. Summers into falls, winters into springs, and somewhere in the remote wilderness of the bottoms, the creature spent his days. rising when the storm cloud blows. And this is where the creature goes, safe within a world he knows. Perhaps he dimly wonders why there is no other such as I. To touch, to love before I die, to listen to my lonely cry.